I don't mean to be mean.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Wait, do I? What is that I hear in the background? It's Mr. Brightside. Well, about time we mosey, I guess.
The knee and thigh slap to stand up.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Better be on my way.
Oh, it's crazy how Brightside became the new closing time without any... I feel like there should have been a committee that made these decisions, but I don't know. Maybe we'll cover it on the other show. We'll cover it on the other show. All right. Well, meanwhile, hi, welcome to Indulgently Minimal. I am Moggy, and I am joined today by Jeff.
Hey up, guys. We do know what we're doing here, I swear.
And Murdoch.
Hello, everyone.
And as we're kicking you out at the beginning of the episode, we're doing a show on third spaces. That is, if it's not the home and it's not the work, what is it? Well, it's a third space.
The first space being home, the second place being work, the third space being...
The subject of today's podcast.
Yeah, the subject of today's podcast, the places that aren't those other two.
Yeah.
And that's a wrap, boys. So
well, okay, good. All right. Oh, yes, very good job, Ah.
Yeah, it's pubs, it's parks, it's playgrounds, it's those kind of places.
If you're from the West, I would definitely say pubs, bars, and certain types of cafes are the absolute stereotypical third space, which is a place you can go to socialize that, as you said, it's not work and it's not home.
Yeah.
But it really is very dependent on your culture and your age. For children, mm-hmm. this can often be things like community centers or...
Youth clubs.
Organized activities like karate is a popular one where we are. You know, a lot of kids doing taekwondo these days.
It's the same here, yeah. Taekwondo, kickboxing.
Yeah.
Sports clubs. Football, yeah. Soccer, basketball.
Yeah.
Organized sports.
Or fan clubs of such sports. Mm. I know in a lot of Europe, there is a huge culture around like the so-called ultra fans of football clubs. And that's another type of third space. It's where you go to meet new people, hang out, and basically not be in the other two places. Mm-hmm. But why is that important? It's like, great, okay, we've just discussed pubs. Why? Well, we're English, that's why.
Everything always happens down the pub. No, we're talking about it because things have gotten weird since lockdown. Things have gotten, things were already on a weird trajectory, but since lockdown, things have gotten strange. And a lot of these places that we would have otherwise gone to no longer exist due to economic problems or COVID itself being the problem. But a lot of these places that we would have gone to, that people would have gone to for these third spaces, for these social activities, no longer exist. And we're starting to see the consequences of that.
Just a small side note. Basically, one of the things that lockdown pandemic has highlighted is like the lack of, you know, the need for study prior to said pandemic.
Explain.
What I was trying to get to is that basically a lot of people have realized that they don't have place to work from home at home. A study was never part of their, you know, consideration.
Right.
Oh, study is in like a room.
A study is in like a home office, basically.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
I shall be taking my afternoon lunch in the study or the library. It's another wing of the house. Your houses all have wings, right?
Mm.
And they can fly.
Woo!
Sorry, help me guide through this because basically, like, one of the other things that has happened during that time is that basically everybody was forced to work from home in, like, somewhat constrained spaces. Not everybody has been afforded the liberty of having a dedicated space to work for work purposes, right?
I mean, I think what we're talking about today is very much building on that idea that we sort of touched on last week, where we were saying you need to carve out these either spaces of time or spaces in your day to do certain things. The third space is an actual academic concept. And as especially Western countries, a lot of the Anglosphere has gone through this problem that we are quite an individualistic society and we've commoditized a lot of things. And the pub, the restaurant, the cafe, all of these have been commoditized so that as we've entered into this period of like cost of living crisis, rents and property costs are at, you know, an all-time high. It's meant that these spaces are finding it harder to exist, and we are seeing unforeseen consequences of that, because it turns out that these third spaces are vital for our well-being.
They really are. They're vital for our mental health. They're vital for our need to socialize. Despite what many of us think, me included, we do need to see other people on occasion.
I am a rock. I am an island.
As much as it chagrins me to say, I mean, so, you know, I have spent some glorious weeks in the middle of nowhere without seeing anybody for, you know, a week or two.
You get a little peculiar when you do that.
After a while, you do start talking to the cows, and it gets, you do need, we do need other people. Look, and I think
speaking to the cows is fine. The only problem is if they start talking back.
Hello there.
No. No. But
I believe it is time for me to re-enter society.
Yeah, it did kind of feel like that sometimes. But there is, with the way that work and home has been, with the working from home, work and home has been combined for many, many people. And it just highlights the need for a third space that is neither of those. It has made it so much more important to be able to get away from work, because work and home are now synonymous for a lot of people.
Well, especially with the commoditization of hobbies and the hustle culture, if your hobby becomes work, even more of your time is fitting into one of these two categories. And this third space, this kind of, I'm now imagining a pie, as it were, with work and home. So like home is things like sleep and relaxation. But the third space is that sort of when you let the little extrovert inside of you out and you run off to sort of go socialize. You need somewhere to get me.
Let him go.
Well, I mean, I think for many of us in the podcast, our extrovert side is small, contained.
It's a small goblin-like creature.
But every now and again, he pops up and we've discovered sometimes he has nowhere to go because, you know, where did all the skate parks and basketball courts and like all of these types of places, like I think when you're a kid, it's easier to enter such spaces. As you become an adult, it's not always as easy to sort of rock up to a bunch of youths, you know.
Hello, fellow children.
Won't you pass me that rock?
Well, it really is like, because when you're a younger person and you go to the skate park, for me, it was the skate park. That was my third place. But you'd go there as a younger person, and you'd go there with your friends and perhaps some friends that were slightly older than you, and there'd be an induction. You'd be introduced to the etiquettes and the social faux pas of this particular space. You'd learn how to interact with people in this particular hobby. And a skate park's a great example because you've got people of lots of different disciplines. You know, you had people on skateboards, you had people on inline skates, you had BMXs, you had scooters.
You had people who liked to hang out in said spaces without partaking in any one of those activities because were not very good at it.
Which, and again, and that's a perfectly acceptable and vital part of the community. There's always those that may not be engaging in the activity, but are there for social interaction, engagement, hyping. Hype men and hype women are very important in these kind of hobbies.
I mean, how many excellent cameramen or photographers, filmographers have gotten started in such spaces.
Yeah, I mean, you still see it today with a lot of the media around skating, that the old tunnel style camera is still in effect. It was a necessity then. Now it's an aesthetic style. And so many people cut their teeth learning how to set up cameras and track fast moving objects as children learning to photograph and video skating.
And I think at this point, it's really important to mention that these spaces should in general be as free to access as is possible. And I think you can even step back from the skate parks and whatnot are a really good example for youths. But even as an adult, when you go to, you know, a bar or a cafe, you can go for free. You know, there's nobody at the door charging you. Like, you're expected to buy a drink or a coffee or something. And depending on where you are, I know where I am in the sort of the Mediterranean, it's very common for people to buy one drink and then they're good for a couple hours. If you're in the sort of European Northwest, you may be expected to keep buying drinks to stay. And this is kind of where this interesting point comes, where a good third space needs to be free to access, but it needs to be either affordable or free, because the socializing shouldn't be gatekept
It shouldn't be gatekept financially, because one of the most wonderful things about a truly accessible third space is that you get people from lots of different cultural backgrounds, a lot of people from different financial situations mingling together. And that's, I mean, we don't even need to talk about how important it is to be integrating and mixing with people of different backgrounds, because it helps you as an individual.
Well, what was it? You had the entire Enlightenment was birthed in coffee houses. You
know, it really was.
The foundation of Europe and America was built on these free to access spaces. Now, I know it was mostly rich people with the time to go to such places, but they were still free to access, and people actually attended them like a show. They would watch these great minds discuss and debate. It's a very good example of a third space.
It really was, and they were so powerful. Powerful ideas at the time came from these places that a lot of governments tried to start banning them because, these people are starting to think for themselves. The power of coffee, people.
So this kind of leads us into today's world, where there's an awkward question that sort of hangs around in the room. Is or can the internet be a third space?
It's a really fun question, because I think it falls into the same idea as, can the outside of your front door be a third space? Yes and no. The internet is a perfect receptacle to hold third spaces within it, but I think it's a bit perhaps too nebulous to call all of the internet a third space. I don't think Gmail is a third space.
Well, how is it we've said the platform is not the community?
Which, I mean, say it again for those at the back.
The platform is not the community. There will be a meeting of the Action Committee in five minutes.
that's a deep cut.
And I think this is also where the modern internet and the fabled internet of yore are at odds with each other, where the old forums and the old BB boards, for example, were this example of free to access, but there was an induction that used to happen. There's a concept known as the Eternal September, because what used to happen was every year around September, new people would find their way onto the internet and they would open up these communities for a very specific amount of time. And the existing users would have to deal with this influx of users who had never been educated on how to act on these spaces. And then when, I can't remember exactly what happened, I believe it had something to do with AOL, but who knows? They basically opened up the floodgates to people can join whenever. And a lot of the old users referred to this event as the Eternal September, because it meant that there was always new users, always people breaking rules and social etiquette. And, well, it's kind of been downhill ever since, really.
Well, I mean, I suppose it's the thing with the internet is that it allows you to access third spaces, forums, bulletin boards. It allows you to access these third spaces, but from the safety and security of your first space, your home.
And oftentimes with an extra layer of anonymity as well, where you feel a little shielded from your actions. So you can, people's personalities tend to get a little bigger in such cases, where they feel a little safer or emboldened to try new things for good or ill.
I'm in the boat of I don't think, online communities are not a complete alternative to third spaces. I think that's the danger.
As you say, terminally online is not a good thing?
Terminally online is definitely not a good thing. I think online communities are extremely useful. I think they're extremely beneficial. Especially when you have, say, geographical restrictions, like the people you want to talk to are not in your neighborhood. But that doesn't negate the importance of finding out who's in your neighborhood.
For sure, the internet has been amazing for allowing people with very niche interests to find like-minded people. And I don't think, and geography doesn't always allow for this. But at the same time, it also means that you're more likely to end up in an echo chamber with people who will just agree with whatever you're saying, which has produced its own problems. I think third spaces also create the opportunity to be challenged. And, it, you know, like the old community center, the old skate park. Skate parks were great for this, where it didn't matter where you came from, rich kid, poor kid, beggar man, thief, so to speak. All that mattered was that you were participating and you were playing by the quote-unquote rules. So you could have all the right gear, you could have all the best equipment, and somebody with a beat-up hand-me-down could still skate rings around you.
Yeah, no snaking. Just that was, I mean, that's like the golden rule of skate parks. No snaking, which is why I have a gigantic scar in my shin. Stupid scooter kids. But it's a fantastic point that in these third spaces, when you've got a digital third space, there's the risk of this echo chamber because you're all gathering around a like-minded niche interest and you're focusing on said niche interest. There's less likely that other things will come up, whereas in the real, like in real life third spaces, skate parks, you're all there for a particular activity. But there's also a lot of downtime while you're waiting for somebody else to, you know, finish on a ramp or finish on a rail. So you start talking to people, and suddenly when you're talking to people, you start talking about more than just that specific activity. And then you find that people have other interests or other opinions, opinions that might differ from yours in one way or another. And you're challenged on your beliefs in many ways. And that's quite a healthy thing to do, especially at a younger age. But it's also incredibly important now as adults that we are challenged on our beliefs, that we are forced to reevaluate on occasion what we're thinking, where we're going, what our beliefs are, because otherwise you just kind of get put on a narrow path and you never think about what you're doing, and that's dangerous.
And I think it's also important noting the difference between social media, which are like hyper public platforms, as compared to like smaller private groups.
I think it's good to understand that not all platforms on the internet are the same. And while communities do form around certain types of discussion, Twitter, for example, was a digital equivalent of a public display board. You know, people are just putting up messages and then commenting on them. It's almost the equivalent of just everybody shouting at each other. Whereas a forum or an IRC chat, for example, would be more like a coffee shop, where people are sat around and there's conversations happening. And I mean, Discord has been amazing for this, where you can have basically different tables in your coffee shop and you can join whichever conversation appeals to you at the time. And a good, diverse Discord community can be very close to a third space because of this. But diversity is the key here. You can end up with, you know, if you join a gaming Discord, you're only going to be around people that like video games. You're never going to get that challenge of, well, actually, they're just not for me.
Yeah. And whilst, you know, like people are going to have very diverse opinions and lifestyles within a particular interest, but it's good on occasion to be, to interact with somebody who just doesn't engage in your hobby. It's quite important, because suddenly you have like, oh, well, okay, I spend 90% of my time playing video games. So what do you do with your time then? And then suddenly you learn about things that you may not otherwise have known. And it's important and it's healthy and it's fun. Depending on what that hobby is, I mean, it may also not be for you.
But that's also
good as well. Yeah. Very good, yeah.
The other point I'd like to make as well is we set sort of borders in terms of social behavior. Like, what is maybe acceptable and encouraged within a small private community might not be accepted in others, public at large. And it's important to understand where things are and aren't appropriate.
I mean, you saw this very much in like the early to mid days of Reddit, for example, where there were people who were in the real world who were acting and communicating in a way that was appropriate in a Reddit community, but was not so much online. And it was very apparent.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes in person as well.
Yes, you know, very much in person. And it's telling when an individual is very much encapsulated in a single small community. Mm. And it does a disservice to the individual to not have diverse sections of communities, more than one community to engage in.
Mm. Well, there's a funny point when we talk about sort of diversifying your portfolio, both of friends and platforms, especially now when our so-called tech landlords are partaking in the same problematic behavior that's causing problems in the real world third spaces. So for example, skate parks and community centers get shut down because funding gets pulled or local councils' priorities change. And then in the real world, we're seeing platforms either flooded with users that go, you know, completely against what the existing user base wants, or the ownership wants to draw more money out of things. And this uncertainty is, you know, very destabilizing to these communities. And it's why it's important to understand what these communities are, how they are separate from the platform. A Twitter community can exist on Mastodon. A Discord community can migrate to a private forum. There's a very, seize the means of production, seize the means of communication underlying element here.
It really is. Like, you've got, when you have tech landlords, tech barons owning these platforms, and imagine going to a youth club and you're having a conversation and the person that owns the building sits down and starts telling you what you should be thinking, or starts yelling over the top of you. That's what's happening in Twitter right now. You can't have a healthy, thriving community when there is a person who can shut it down and boot you out a moment's notice without recourse. That's not a community. I don't know what that is. I don't know what the word for it is, but it's not a community. And unless you have control and some part of an ownership over your space, it's not secure, it's not safe in the long term, and it's probably not long-term viable either, which is why, for example, skate parks, social clubs, youth clubs, when they're run by councils and run by people as a whole, there's a lot more security in that because there's no one individual that can just shut everything down.
Well, it's a really good point to make for many, many reasons, because, for example, if you have a community skate park that gets shut down for one reason or another, the community isn't the physical concrete, for example, and, you know, there's long history of outlaw skating where you're not supposed to, because those communities exist separate from the physical space. And the same is true of the digital places. For example, when one community gets shut down, it's common to see the same people migrating to similar services with the same usernames. And, you know, little networks of people who are communicating privately can rebuild these communities in other places. And it's why it's really important to understand that parasocial relationships are not this. You know, it can feel like when you're a fan of a certain influencer or internet personality, especially when it's more of a round table format, that you are in a type of relationship with these people. It feels like it. You know them, you listen to them, you hear their life updates week in, week out. That's not a real community. If they disappear one day, if they just go offline, they're gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, unless there is true back and forth, one-to-one conversation, it's not a community. You know, there are many podcasts that I listen to. And again, yeah, it's true. You feel like you've known these people for years. You've been listening to them for years. You've been sat in on their conversations, but they don't know. They know you're listening because you're a number on the screen, but they don't know you. You're not in a relationship with these people, and it's easy to attach yourself to these people. It's very easy to do so, and it's important to remember that it's not an actual social relationship.
Mm-hmm. There's a phrase that I came across not too long ago that really hit home. It's basically knowing everything about somebody is not really knowing that person. In order to know someone, there needs to be an exchange of trust.
Yeah.
And I think it's why real-world third spaces are still important, regardless of how good a community you may have online. Simply because those types of connections are... they're different in some intangible way. Even like if you speak to, you know, a good example would be bands. They know they're hardcore fans. They'll recognize them show after show, and they do sometimes build up relationships with them. And it's very difficult to do the same thing online.
I mean, there is one instance where there's a D&D podcast I listen to, and one of their hardcore fans did end up becoming a regular on the show. She did like a guest spot once, and everybody and they just really vibed really well. So now she's like a full regular. That's not the normal. That doesn't happen. That's like I've never seen that anywhere else. So it's not normal, but it does happen because I suppose anything's possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this leads us on to kind of why we want to talk about it, which is unfortunately from a slightly more negative angle, which is this is important, but we only see the importance of this when we start to lose these things.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can only speak for the Western Anglosphere. That's the only culture I can really understand because I don't really speak any other language. I'm trying.
But it's hard, it's hard.
It's very hard. But we have lost a lot of these third places, especially in the UK, for example. We've lost a lot of them. A lot of the free third places, a lot of the more diverse in terms of activity third spaces, we've lost a lot of them. And it's telling. It is very telling.
It's isolating is what it is. And I think for the longest time, I remember in the UK, there was this complaint that many of the good third spaces required money. You had to go somewhere and pay for an activity or pay for a drink. And they're saying, what do kids have to do if you have no money? They just end up loitering and getting into all sorts of trouble. And this has been talked about for a very long time, and it only seems to be getting worse.
Well, because, I mean, I know, for example, in the UK, the third places were removed. A lot of the funding for the third places have been removed. And when you've got a lot of these, especially the youths, when you've got a lot of these young people with nowhere to go, they loiter, they hang out, they get up to mischief. So what happened is they criminalized loitering and mischief. They didn't fix the problem that they had nowhere to go. They just made what they were doing illegal, further causing more isolation.
Yeah. So... to put a positive spin on this, how can we fix that? Well, we find new communities. We make communities. And I think one of the best examples I've seen, although it's possibly one that comes with its own challenges, is tabletop gaming. Many, many game stores will run game nights. And depending on whether it's board games or card games or tabletop RPGs, they can be very easy to set up in a multitude of locations. And once word gets around, it draws in a community quite naturally. But they do tend to need a bit of a strong hand because it can draw some, shall we say, challenging personalities.
Very much so. But there's also, you know, there's creating your own communities. It is work. It's something you have to do. But there's a lot of stuff out there. A colleague of mine, for example, is part of a photography club.
That's cool.
There's quite a few of them. You know, there's a lot of them, but there's these little pockets that know each other locally, and then they meet up in a real life place, and they have like a list of tasks that they've got to do, and they go and photograph these particular things in particular ways, and then they all go and compare notes, and that's their community, and it's a really cool thing.
Well, I just want to say as well, like before you start to sit there and judge or dismiss. Remember that both J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis were part of a writing circle, and they would share bits of what they were working on. And those works would turn out to be like the Chronicles of Narnia and Lord of the Rings. So, yeah, structured, planned meetings with like-minded people can produce, apparently, some of the greatest works of fantasy fiction.
And then, there was Mervyn Peake in the back eating glue because nobody wanted to talk about Gormenghast.
Oh, what was it they used to say about Sir Tolkien? Not again with the elves. Come on, man.
Yeah, but I mean, you've got plenty of these places, photography clubs, singing clubs.
Yeah.
It's out there.
I think we have also sort of alluded to this on a previous episode. Basically, one of the better ways to get into a new interest or a new hobby is engaging with a community around said interest or hobby. It is a way to meet new people in addition to learning a new thing.
Mm.
And it goes both ways, right? You've got, if you're interested in a hobby and you want to further that interest, find the community and they will help you get into the hobby. But on the flip side, if you're looking for community and you're looking for friends, the hobby can be the route in. You're going to, you can follow your hobby, your interest, find the community of people around it. And then naturally you found like-minded people who might want to be your friend.
So the concept of finding your peers, like for so many of us, we think of peer, it's people of our age and social status.
Yeah.
But peer, your peer will vary depending on which community you're in. If you're in a photography club, your peers are those who are into photography. If you're in a singing club, your peers are those that are singing. They could be of any age, any gender. It doesn't matter, as long as you're all engaging in the same kind of hobby, they become your peers. And then from then, they can become your friends and you can start talking about whatever. Usually Moss. It usually goes towards Moss because I always want to talk about Moss.
Well, Jeff is a very special friend.
Moss.
I think it's also important to highlight that's not to say that this is easy for everyone. I think for the more extroverted people, it's a natural process. For more introverted people, it takes effort. And
it's work. I've had to chase people down the street talking about Moss. They do not want to hear about it.
It can get more difficult as you get older.
It can, and that's why it's worth talking about in some ways, where maintaining these third spaces, knowing about their importance is one thing as well. When you're older, we don't always fully realize how easy our young life was made for making friends and finding our peers, because our peers were the people we sat next to in school. I mean, how many friendships are formed simply from having the same letter last name, right?
I mean, there's an old, like green text thing from years ago. It was about this woman was in university and she saw the instance of like two blokes making friends in the most blokiest of ways. And it was two guys that didn't know each other and both of them were wearing t-shirt with horizontal stripes on it. And they just look at each other going, stripes, yeah, stripes. And then they sat next to each other for the rest of the semester.
Nice. What is it, the old Family Guy joke? Guy friends, we're friends because a computer made us roommates in college.
Yeah.
Well, it's also important simply because, like, as we age, one of the things we learn to do, and I'll say maybe exponentially quickly, is to prune the social circles that are no longer good for us.
Yeah.
And it's a continual process. Like, you will enter social circles, social groups, friend groups, peer groups, who are good for you for a while, and then you find that you may outgrow them, and it becomes more and more difficult to sort of expand the branches.
I mean, any community to remain healthy needs to, and by community, I do mean friendship groups and larger groups as well, like anything. They need to be maintained with effort. You have to realize that if there is a problem, whether that's a problematic member or a problematic set of behaviors, as a community, you have to identify it and shut it down. For example, like intolerance shouldn't be tolerated. If you have people coming into your community and causing problems for everybody around them, you shouldn't be like, well, they're just being themselves. No, communities have rules, and as do friendships. If friendships are no longer, you know, making you happy and fulfilled, then you have to reevaluate, understand why, and proceed to either...
If there is a solution, we should seek to find it. And if there is, and if the solution is removal, then that is the solution.
Yeah. And making peace with the fact that people come and people go.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're driving at, right? Where ultimately a third space is a forge. It's a, I don't know why that image is coming to mind, but you know, it's a place where people can come, people can go, but it's something that draws everybody in, and within the fiery furnace, friendships are formed and alliances are made. And I'm getting very Tolkien-esque right now.
Communities are born in third spaces. The third spaces, they are the forge. They're the pit of creation. And they're also the engine. That's where these places are driven. That's where the energy comes from to perpetuate and sustain these communities. is in these third spaces.
Hmm. The platform's not the community?
Yeah.
I mean, and here's the thing, like, and I think we all tend to, as generation after generation, assume that we know everything and we know best.
But, well, we do, though. We do.
Well, our generation does, of course. But, you know, before you go and dismiss those old men playing backgammon in coffee shops, they have friends, you know?
Like, they have been playing backgammon in that coffee shop for 40 years, and it's
apparently
it's
backgammon
easy.
Is insanely old. Human it's beings even play. Yeah.
It's one of the oldest games in the world, and I like it because it's one of the board games I can actually win at. So I like backgammon. I'm terrible at everything else.
So when you see old men in coffee shops playing backgammon and you sort of think, why would they do that? Tell yourself, they have a place to go, they have an activity to do, and people to do it with. What more do you want?
Yeah, well, it's spending time and enjoying yourself. And it's a good question to ask yourself, you know, in 40 years' time, where am I going to, what is old man Jeff going to be? Where is my, you know, where am I going to be at Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning? Well, probably recording this podcast, but...
If we were still doing that in 40 years, for some reason in my mind in 40 years, old man Jeff is the guy who lives in the woods.
Hmm. I could still record from the woods. We'll have wireless energy by then.
I think it's a good point because we need to be focusing on where we're putting our energy and where we're trying to draw our sense of community and friendship from, because I think some of the places that we're doing so may turn out to be parasocial things where it's not real community. Everybody commenting on the same Instagram posts feels like community, but it may not be.
Hmm. It's important, like, losing third spaces, you know, it means we're losing community, but it also means we're losing potential community.
And yeah, we're losing the place for that community to be born.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And also when we have third spaces that are quite controlled by individuals, those communities are guided far too much in one direction or another. They're not organic. So,
and they're precarious. They can be taken away.
They can be taken away at any time. It's, yeah, as we've said over and over, it's very important for a healthy community, a healthy society, a healthy individual to have these communities to go to and multiple communities to go to. And that starts with having a third place that is there, that is available, that is ideally free to access.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one that could either be easily replaced or one that is controlled by the community itself. So if one coffee shop closes, we move to a different one. If the council pulls funding for the community center, we try and fund it ourselves. It's these types of situations.
That's true. I think that really is the key. Yeah, the power is in the people.
Yeah, the platform is not the community. Repeat it after me. The platform is not the community.
It really is. Like, the community has the intelligence, the community has the power, the community has the ability to drive and access change. The platform is just a building.
Yeah. Mm.
Or not. Could be an open space.
It could be an open space. Yeah, the platform is a physical space, and physical spaces are moved through.
Mm. Yeah.
Ultimately, if you lose the third, if physical space is lost, if the community is there, it should, you know, if the community is there, we can find somewhere else. The importance is that community has autonomy.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think that's what we were trying to get at today. So I hope you have enjoyed listening to this episode. I hope that this has given you something to think about. And if you want us to talk more on this idea, do send us an email at indulgentlyminimal@gmail.com. We're always happy to hear from you. And as we're exploring these ideas, we really do value your feedback and what our little perspective can bring to the conversation, because we're starting to realize this is important and we're happy to have our own little platform and community to talk about it and see where those conversations lead us. You can follow us on Instagram, and we're also on Mastodon. There are links in the show notes to all of our socials. If you want to be notified when new episodes come up, be part of our little community just to keep everybody together, shall we say? Also, we want to say a huge thank you to those who are helping support our show on Ko-fi. We're self-funded, so again, your donations really do help us a lot. We are very grateful to each and every one of you. If you want to throw us a dollar, a euro, pound coin, whatever you have lying around, the link is ko-fi.com/indulgently-minimal. Again, links in the show notes. I've been Moggy, and I've been joined today by Jeff.
Thanks, guys. Remember to go easy on yourselves.
And Murdoch.
And remember, folks, indulge a little.
Thanks for joining us. See you for the next one. Bye.
See you later, guys.
Take care, everyone.